And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
You see this?
A family watching baseball on DirecTV with no satellite dish in sight.
Let's heckle them.
You call that changing the channel?
Choke up on the remote, buddy.
I hope getting all these games on DirecTV makes up for your mother not pre-chewing your sunflower seeds.
DirecTV has the most MLB games. Visit DirecTV.com. Claim based on total games offered on national and regional sports networks with choice package or higher. Availability of RSNs varies by zip code and package. High-speed internet service required. Terms and restrictions apply.
The Athletic.
It's Straight Outta Cobham, a show about Chelsea FC from The Athletic. Coming up, evisceration at the Emirates, another tough trip awaits as Villa come into view, the women's team look to book their place in the Champions League final, and the under-18s could wrap up the title. Available for free wherever you get your podcasts and ad-free on The Athletic, this is Straight Outta Cobham. Our standard doesn't sustain the bad days. When we have bad days, you know, we are so bad. Not exactly motivational words from producer Lucy before we started recording, but a grain of truth there. I'm sure you'll agree, listener. We're back to talk about Chelsea for the second time this week. It's me, Matt, and I am joined by two of The Athletic's very best. Hello, Simon Johnson.
What's all the fuss about? Chelsea is still ninth.
Twas ever thus, for now at least. A jubilant Dominic Fifield's with us too. How you doing, Dom?
I'm fine, thanks, Matthew. How's your green waste?
Still yet to be collected. Listen, I've moved downstairs for today's record because I've had an issue with the bin men not taking my garden waste for the last couple of weeks. And if only that was the biggest of my problems, but it is a real struggle. So any updates throughout the pod as we go. But we can't just talk about green waste. Let's talk about waste of money, specifically some of the Chelsea players. Sorry.
Best segue of the season. That's fantastic.
I thought we were now going to go on to which players would be put in the bin.
Either or. Probably not recyclable, most of it, but anyway.
Oh, this is great. This is the content they're tuning in.
I'm going to talk myself into trouble.
This is what it's come to, everybody.
Let's start our review of Arsenal 5, Chelsea 0 with a tweet from Opta, who say that Arsenal recorded their biggest ever victory against Chelsea across all competitions, brackets 5-0, whilst this was the Blues' heaviest defeat in a London derby since losing 6-0 to Queen's Park Rangers in March 1986. Domination. A sorry, miserable night in North London on Tuesday then. Here's the Toomey take from inside the Emirates.
They might be Cole Palmer FC after all, guys. It's a party here at the Emirates Stadium, a party at Chelsea's expense. It kind of always felt like it was going to be that way, certainly from the moment that Leandro Trossard beat Georgi Petrovic at his near post inside 4 minutes, very similar to the goal that Jaden Bogle scored against Petrovic about 3 weeks ago. There are some worrying mistakes creeping into his game, but he was actually one of Chelsea's better performers tonight. Weirdly, given how many goals Chelsea ended up conceding, they were so open. Even when they somehow muddled through to half-time, only 1-0 down, it felt like more through luck than judgment. Pochettino's decision to change three of the back four that stood up much more stoutly to Manchester City at Wembley on Saturday will be questioned, definitely. This was not a good advert for the Monaco alumni Benoit Badiashile and Axel Disasi, but nothing about Chelsea's structure worked, really. For the first goal, Noni Madueke gave Alfie Gilchrist zero protection, neither did the midfield, to an overload from the surging Declan Rice and the overlapping Trossard. On the other side, Mark Cucurella battled gamely, I felt, against Arsenal's triangle of sadness of Odegaard, White and Saka. But even he couldn't do anything in the end, really. He was given absolutely no help by Mikhailo Mudryk, who managed to offer nothing at either end. He still doesn't know where to be and when in this team. It was painfully obvious watching this game why it was only his 13th Premier League start of the season, why he's still not trusted by Pochettino. Nicholas Jackson had some nice moments running the channels in the first half, but his confidence in front of goal that's completely shot. He had a couple more embarrassing misses in this one. And on the whole, Chelsea just looked a really pale shell of the teams that have at least given Arsenal a game here in recent years. It hasn't been a happy hunting ground more often than not, but Arsenal have never had an easier night, I don't think, against Chelsea. It was quite remarkable that a few Chelsea fans did actually stick around till the final whistle to clap Thiago Silva and Trevor Chalobah, who were the first over. Maybe they should have been the starting centre-back pairing for this game. It's hard to know what more to say, really. I didn't have great expectations coming into this, given that we knew Palmer wouldn't play, but it is quite startling just what a house of cards Chelsea is without him. Europa League once again has receded, and for Pochettino, I think the worry now is that things could get so ugly in the next few games that his own future becomes a much bigger, more pressing topic of conversation. This is Liam signing off from the Emirates.
Had lots of tweets from you at Asso Cobham Pod is the place to go on X if you'd like to follow us. Mark says, maybe this result will actually help put some of these players who think they're better than they actually are in their place. Simon, do you think that that is a thing?
No. I don't think they needed reminding. I mean, this is a particularly painful reminder, but I don't get the impression that their players swanning around thinking they've made it big, because they're used to getting beaten on a regular basis and had only suffered a very painful defeat a few days before. I wasn't surprised. I was messaging people, including Dom, I think, was one of them, before the game, that I expected Chelsea to not just lose but get thrashed. And there are a few reasons for that, and not just because Chelsea aren't very good. I just felt the timing of this fixture, and I don't want to sound like I'm making any excuse for them, but the timing of this fixture couldn't have been any worse. This is a team that, unlike Manchester City a few days before, who responded brilliantly to the heartbreak of losing a very high-profile quarterfinal just a few days before, I didn't think that Chelsea would be able to do the same. And in terms of winning a high-profile game. So then you sort of come to the fact that Cole Palmer's not there, Mal Augusto's not there. And the moment you saw Chelsea actually sort of put out a video of the team arriving, and you could see in their faces, it was like they were being sent to the gallows. You know, Pochettino walked in smiling, but the rest of them looked beaten before the kickoff. And yeah, I just felt it was all set up for Arsenal to win fairly comfortably. But that does not excuse what we saw. Because there's one thing, losing a game and losing against a London rival, but it's also the manner of the defeat. And the manner of the surrender in the second half in particular was unforgivable.
Curious team selection. Three of the back four changed from Saturday's FA Cup semi-final. Maurizio Pochettino on that said, I need to explain that Chalobah didn't play at the start of the season, and Silva, a 39-year-old, needs rest also. We needed to provide the team with energy. Rhys and Mallow were not available. We used Mudryk for Palmer, and I think the circumstances to make a decision and make some changes. He said after the game, Dom, we cannot blame the players. The circumstances are bigger than the players. We cannot blame the young guys that came here, a team fighting to win the Premier League. Most people who got in touch with us on X, formerly known as Twitter, were more keen to either blame Pochettino himself or the sporting directors. Where would you like to point your finger of blame?
I think it's a bit of everybody, probably. I mean, the sporting directors have obviously constructed the team, and there are a lot of their signings in that lineup. A lot of their signings, and the best two weren't in that lineup because they were ruled out on the day of the game, as Si says. And they're just not, as a collective, that group of players are not ready to compete with an Arsenal team that can see the finish line in the title race. That's coupled with the emotional fallout and the mental fatigue from the defeat in the FA Cup semi-final a few days earlier. That contributed to it. I suppose if you're pointing a finger at the sporting directors, you're saying that those players are simply never going to be good enough to to mount a title challenge in the Premier League. And I don't know whether that's true. None of us know whether that's true or not. I can understand why there's frustration that these players aren't the finished article and they haven't been signed, but that's not what Chelsea bought. They bought potential at vast expense. So you can blame the... Yeah, but that, you can point fingers at the co-sporting directors in terms of recruitment if you think, if you believe that none of these players are ever going to be any good enough. Pochettino, I had a bit of sympathy for him in his team selection. But then you bring on Thiago Silva and you bring on Chaloba, and I just wonder whether it was... I mean, it was a bit harsh to ask Gilchrist to go in there and play it right back against a rampant Arsenal team who were bound to be up for it. And unfortunately, I mean, I don't actually hold him responsible particularly. I think he was badly exposed. And look, he was often the man that played Arsenal on side, but he's playing in an unfamiliar position, essentially. That's not where he wants to be playing. He wants to be a centre-half in games like that further down the line as a Chelsea player. So you could argue that was a poor tactical selection from Pochettino. Maybe De Zerzi should have been shoved out there to fill in the void left by Gusto, and one of those other two centre-halves could have played alongside Badiashile if they were both genuinely not able to start the game. But beyond that, I don't really know what else are we criticising him for. I mean, he's lost Palmer. He's lost the one player, the man that he christened Cole Palmer FC or whatever. I mean, that might have been a mistake, actually, on Pochettino's part, giving us in the media a nice little soundbite like that we could use and we will use regularly over the weeks and months ahead. But in terms of the selection, I'm not really sure what more he could have done. Lots of injuries still, too many injuries still. He's asked players to play pretty much where you'd want them to play. The structure of the teams was the same as the structure of the team during an 8-match unbeaten run in the Premier League prior to that match. And it just didn't work out because Arsenal were streets ahead of them. But I mean, it just reflects where the club is at the moment. And the sloppiness, the fragility, the way they collapsed after the interval. I actually thought they competed for about 10, 15 minutes quite well in the first half, having gone behind. They gave it a go and they looked as if they might come back into it. Jackson missed his customary chances. He looks a bit... his confidence has gone again in front of goal. But it just shows how brittle everything is, really, and the state that they're in. And they're just not ready to compete. They're just simply not ready to compete. They're miles off competing against elite teams. They might have the occasional good game against them, and they played very well against them at home earlier this season. But in a run-in where Arsenal are focused and they can, you know, they have the prize within reach, Chelsea were blown away.
Yeah, I just think that questions have to be asked about how Chelsea have ended up with Monaco's centre-back pairing, for one thing. Badiashile, what has happened to him? It's been 12 months, I think, since he picked up an injury which ruled him out for 3 or 4 months. And I think that there's even some jokes going around that he's been replaced by like a brother or something in the meantime or something, because he doesn't look the player that sparked a chant. When was the last time that we've heard the Todd Boehly went to France chant? Because it's a bit like the Bakayoko chant. Remember, the never gives the ball away, which was should have been flagged by a legal team.
Would anyone want to chant about Todd Boehly at the moment? I mean, genuine question.
Oh, I think they would, yeah.
Well, yeah, in they wouldn't want to use that chant, though, because that was vaguely complimentary. I mean, that was celebrating him going off to France and bringing back a player that they thought was good. It's confidence, isn't it, with players, isn't it? I mean, he's
gone. Confidence-wise. And that's why perhaps a tougher manager would have made changes at half-time after getting away with it. And where Pochettino has to come under the microscope, and Dom sort of touched on it already, if you come out afterwards and say Silva and Chalaba weren't capable of playing, having played on Saturday, and then bring them both on in the second half, you've kind of undermined your own argument, because you're bringing them on. So they must have been in some kind of state to play in. I think most people looked at that team sheet to make three changes to the back four That's a lot. And your only one to stay is Mark Cucurella, who's not exactly first name on the team sheet if everybody's fit.
But was probably the best Chelsea player on the night.
In fairness to him, I think he did put in a shift, certainly for longer than most.
So flimsy though, isn't he? Every time I looked up, he seemed to be, his hair was flying everywhere as he felt the floor.
Well, it's the first thing I spot when he's playing. I just think he's showing off. You know, some of us could only dream of just one of those curly locks. Anyway, back to the point. And also, I just wonder whether can Pochettino set Chelsea up to be boring? You know, to be that sort of everyone behind the ball. Chelsea have been well organised occasionally. Sort of off the top of my head, I just sort of remember games where Chelsea have been quite solid. But it just felt like he sent lambs out to the slaughter a little bit. In saying that, if they'd taken one of their chances in the first half, it might have just given them that injection of belief, which I don't think they had at kickoff. But it's the second half again. I mean, how many times have they come out in the second half as if they're just down the local park having a kick around? It's just weird. They just come out with a really flat attitude, and opponents clearly sense it. I mean, Arsenal clearly sort of went, right, let's go for it. The fact that Arteta got booked, I think just before half time or around half time, showed that Chelsea were in a contest.
Yeah, which is presumably why he didn't change it at half time. I mean, at that point, you actually looked at it and thought, I was watching it with a Chelsea fan. I was saying to him, I think you've got a chance here. You know, if you come out with the same attitude after half time that you'd shown in the 10 minutes before half time, you could actually go on and equalise here and cause a few bit of anxiety at the Emirates. But
yeah, I think, when I say that, I'm in terms of getting away with it, I think I'm sort of referring more to Badiashile, who I think was just from the outset was.
Yeah.
You could tell he just didn't want to be there, or certainly after a few minutes didn't want to be there, and was just having one. And you feel for guy, you know, it's very easy to get angry with them and forget that they're human beings as well. I don't think Badiashile was particularly happy with life at the moment. So yeah, this notion that everyone's swanning around thinking they're the bee's knees, I'm not sure that's the case. I just think you could argue they're the opposite, actually, that their confidence, they kind of is quite thin.
Do you think they got the players that could have clogged it up? I mean, look at the example of Everton. Everton were poor in victory against Burnley. They come to Chelsea and they play, by Everton standard, they play quite an open game for them. I mean, I know it's relative, but it's for them, that was an open, porous game, and they get walloped 6-0. And yet, Dyche in the next two, subsequent two fixtures, he does find a way. He goes back to basics. He brings in an Idrissa Gana Gueye-type character. He could just go in there and sit in front of the back line and help clog things up. And surprise, surprise, they keep two successive clean sheets, beating Liverpool along the way, and now they're pretty much safe. And so that's their season objective done. I don't know whether Chelsea have got a player that they could lean on. Obviously, injuries have limited the number of defensive midfielders that they've got available. But could Chalobah have sat there possibly and done that? I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, he has played in midfield, so he could have done that. I'm sort of thinking more the way they were set up generally was still quite open. It doesn't help that another player, Mudryk, in the footage that Chelsea showed of players getting off the bus and walking down towards the dressing room, it looked like he wanted to walk to the Arsenal dressing room. Because you could see people were going, no, you're in this one. And he was starting to walk to the other one. And I had to laugh at that clip. Because it's kind of almost summed him up in a nutshell. It's like, I'd rather have been in the other one. But I'm not totally anti-Mudryk, but I did think that game was not for him because of the inevitable grief that he was going to get from Arsenal fans, the spotlight being on him. It was inevitable that Trossard was going to score. All of that, and it looked like he didn't want to be there. So I was quite surprised that Sterling didn't start that one. Someone with a bit more experience. I know he's not exactly fans' favourite at the moment, but I think he would have been a bit more of an asset in that fixture. Someone with a bit of experience on that pitch.
Yeah, Mudryk has got some qualities, there's no doubt about that, but he just seems to have no interest whatsoever in tracking back, does he? And that made Cucurella's job even more difficult. A few more tweets before we move on from this. Paddy says, Poch has to go at the end of the season, doesn't he? Been on the fence, but unacceptable not to set up the side to be compact and to make zero changes when it's clearly not working. Biggest red flag that we often look planless and like we need upgrades to 4 to 5 players, even considering injuries. Jack wonders if this was the biggest embarrassment of the Premier League era for the club. Even the 6-0 against City, we finished third and won the Europa League that year. Fundamentally, top to bottom, pretty much everything is a mess. Michael says, I messaged on Monday being positive in Poch in. I'm still Poch in, but wow, that was on him for the team selection. Playing what is a League Cup adjacent team away at Arsenal is some decision, rightfully beaten, but maybe expose some players who are not up to it. Here's one from Kenneth. He says, Liam, Si, Dom, Lucy and Lucy's dad will all write this off, what I'm about to say, but I can't be more honest and serious. We need Tuchel back. We need someone that loves the club and the badge. Todd needs to take his medicine, say I'm sorry, and fix this now. Simon, let's nip this one in the bud. He wouldn't come back even if Chelsea wanted him, would he?
No. I always feel like it's like a disclaimer. It's sort of to say, you know, Chelsea Football Club, never say never, it's bonkers as a basket case. But it's just not going to happen on either front. I mean, I get told Chelsea regret not sacking him sooner, even now. So there's clearly, it wasn't a nice parting of the ways. And Thomas Tuchel is not particularly enamoured with the owners either, which is why he wasn't too, he was sad to leave Chelsea, but I don't think he was sad to leave them. So I understand the emotion, the affection for Tuchel exists. It's a bit like Chelsea pining for Mourinho, like, which is, there's an element of that still going on. You know, bring Mourinho back. But in Tuchel's case, it's not going to happen. Also, you could argue, well, did Chelsea get also the best out of Tuchel and vice versa? Because look what Tuchel's done at Bayern Munich. It's an open goal of a club to win trophies. Of course, he could still win a Champions League, but to become the first Bayern Munich coach not to win the Bundesliga for what, over a decade, is nothing to be proud of. And he's already been essentially given his marching orders. So, you know, Tuchel is not exactly this, how shall I put it, this blemish-free, that's not the best way to put it, but you know where I'm coming from, a guy with a Midas touch without any downside. As for Pochettino, what's going to happen? Well, nothing's really changed in terms of Chelsea want to assess, have always wanted to assess things at the end of the season, which I think is fair enough. They didn't want a repeat of last season where they made a change late on and look what happened. That didn't exactly go very well. Will they make a change? I mean, it's very, very difficult. There are definitely arguments for and against, but what I think the club might not appreciate is fan sentiment. And if this run-in goes badly, it's going to be very difficult for Pochettino to win the fans back. He's already, after Monday night, Tuesday night rather, he's already facing an uphill task because, like we touched on earlier, that wasn't just a defeat, it was an embarrassment. And Arsenal fans can lord that over Chelsea fans for a number of years. So, got to beat Tottenham. If ever there's a must-win game for Pochettino, beat his former club, it might be the only way that he can keep some fans on board.
All right. Well, Tom had a big question. What do the club need to do and what are they realistically likely to do in the summer and possibly beyond to address the situation we currently find ourselves in? We risk a third consecutive year of underperformance, and possibly worse, this becoming the new norm for Chelsea. I'm going to see if producer Lucy can get sign off on a 25-part summer series for us to address that question properly, Tom. So stand by, TBC on that. All right, we'll go pay a couple of bills, come back and talk about Aston Villa.
This episode is brought to you by Michelob Ultra, the official beer sponsor of the NBA. Want to get closer to the game than ever before? Michelob Ultra Courtside is giving fans the chance to win exclusive NBA prizes and experiences like official gear, courtside seats to an NBA game, and more. Head over to MichelobUltra.com/courtside to learn more.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard. As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY 467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
So another away day that could be called tricky. Saturday night trip to Villa Park next for Chelsea as they take on Aston Villa in the no way massively inconvenient for away supporters time of 8 o'clock. In the evening. Simon, you're going to make 11 changes for this match, presumably?
Yeah, I'm one of them. Yeah, I can call it now. They wanted an experienced figurehead to do a good Enzo Fernandez impression, chug around in midfield, struggling to keep up with the pace of the game. And I don't have a hernia problem to blame.
Yet.
Well, did for little twins playing golf yesterday. But...
So you mentioned Enzo there, Simon. There are some reports, unconfirmed as we record, that he might already have had a hernia operation. Presumably on his part, that's to try and get him ready for the Copa America rather than anything Chelsea related.
Yeah, but also I just think enough's enough. It just shows, doesn't it, that you know you can analyse a player's form, but there may be something else going on. And in Fernandez's case, it's actually been well known that he's had this hernia problem that he's been carrying for months. And is it a surprise that he's not looking like the Enzo Fernandez that we saw for the first 6 months? If you're carrying that into games, it's undoubtedly going to affect your ability to play at the level you want. And it just felt like Chelsea were just putting him out there. It doesn't help, of course, the injuries to other midfielders. But I just think now, forget Copa America, it's also for his own good. I just think, get it fixed. It may, well, depends how you look at it, it may or may not harm Chelsea's sort of last hope of qualifying for Europe. But now that Chelsea are out of the FA Cup as well, I just think you've got to put the player first. This is a £106 million asset. You can't be sort of making things, you know, deteriorate it even more. It could be out for even longer next season. So I think it's the right decision.
We could make a lot of changes, as we're alluding to, Dom. I think we can probably assume that if available, Thiago Silva, Malo Gusto, Trevor Chalobah might well come back for this one. I wonder if there might be a temptation to maybe take Nicholas Jackson out of the firing line, but then who comes in to replace him? It's either going to be David Washington or maybe put in Sterling as a false nine or something like that. But Sterling seems to have fallen massively out of favour as well.
Yeah. I mean, I suppose you could play if Cole Palmer's past fit. On the chance he could play as a false nine, potentially.
Oh, no. Still scarred by Middlesbrough away. Thank you very much.
Fine. Okay. That idea goes out the window. Well, Raheem it is. Yeah, he has fallen out of favour and he's reduced to cameos now, isn't he? Which, yeah, it's difficult because he is, as we've spoken about a number of times, he's one of the more experienced members of the squad. He's not maybe one of the on-pitch leaders in the way that... you know, Chelsea captains or leaders in the past have made their presence felt, but he does have that experience and has been there and done it, and you think they would lean on him more. So, he probably would step in on that. I want to see Carney Chukwuemeke have a run out. I've been baffled that he's not had game time of any significance for weeks. You know, up against his former club, this might be an occasion for him to just to remind us all of his qualities, playing in that possibly as a number 10, particularly if Conor Gallagher's going to now have to drop back alongside Moises Caicedo to operate in the two. So I really hope he gets a run out.
Do they just not trust his fitness still, Simon? Because he hasn't started since the second game of the season. We've seen it, a couple of cameos. He scored that goal against Leicester in the cup. But Dom's right. I looked at the team sheet for Arsenal and thought, surely he's a better option to play in the 10 than Mudryk.
Yeah, I think it has to be partly fitness related, because even after the goal he scored, it was against Leicester, wasn't it, in the FA Cup, he was then on the medical weekly bulletin a few days later going, he's being medically assessed again or whatever, and he's just like, oh, surely not. So that suggests that there is some issue still, or they're certainly very nervous about it. Of course, suffered that knee injury against West Ham in the second game of the season. And you got a feel for the guy, because I think Pochettino genuinely regards him highly and would play him if he fully trusted him. Whether to start him at Aston Villa, though, where the fans are going to sing a very charming ditty at him all game, it would be an opportunity for him to show that he is worth the money and that he is, whether he's greedy or not, he was right to leave. But I wonder what he's thinking, actually, because, of course, Aston Villa are now flying as a club, and it's almost like they've swapped places, isn't it?
Well, did you think, Simon, after the 2019 Europa League final, that you'd be looking at the opposition dugout and thinking, oh, I really hope we get that guy as our manager in the next few years?
Well, I remember last season sitting there in the press box at Stamford Bridge and going, how have Aston Villa end up with a better manager than Chelsea, when it was Emery v Potter? And I was going, that's the guy. I mean, he was a figure of fun almost, wasn't he, when he was asked to coach? And when you actually think about it, I mean, he had, and the next Liverpool coach is going to have potentially a very similar thing. Incredibly difficult job, whoever came in after Wenger, and he wasn't that bad. But of course, it was also a very toxic time for Arsenal, with fans protesting against the ownership and all of that. And it just seemed like he was part of the scapegoat. Whereas they've shown a lot more, well, I was going to say they've shown a lot more support for Arteta. They were on Arteta's back still only sort of 2 years ago. Even last year when they blew the title race, there was a bit of, oh, he's blown it again. And look, they haven't won anything yet. So let's see. But I'm fully respect for Emery because of the job he's done at Aston Villa. I think his Europa League record, of course, is phenomenal anyway. But to come into Aston Villa when they're in a relegation battle under Gerrard, and to turn that just shows that you make the right appointment, you get a manager, he can provide alchemy to a squad. That's what Chelsea hoped Pochettino would do, but he's yet to do it.
To return to the monikers that we've been giving these teams, Aston Villa are Unai Emery FC. He has been allowed to effectively bring in his own recruitment staff, sporting director, backroom team, extensive backroom teams.
His son as the reserve goalie for the under-21s.
Chelsea would never have allowed a manager, a head coach to do that. It just wouldn't have happened. So he's in the perfect environment to make that club what he wants it to be. And you know, ambitious owners as well, who are willing to spend money. And I mean, I don't think anybody envisaged it would take off in the way it has. But as Si says, from the shambles they'd become under Steven Gerrard to through the sprint up the table last season and this season's excellence. I mean, another European challenge, yes, but Champions League, no one would have predicted that. And they've been sensational, absolutely sensational, with a goal threat from Ollie Watkins, brilliant, incisive, dangerous wingers who they can interchange. They don't play every week together in Diaby and Bailey. A solid midfield in Douglas Luiz, who's he's just, ever since Arsenal were linked with him and tried to sign him, his game has gone to new levels. Then you chuck in the regular bane of Chelsea, McGinn, and his energy and his goals, and a solid back line that's coped without, you know, Tyrone Mings, who was their main man for, you know, a year. He's basically not played this season. I mean, it's with the best goalkeeper in the world thrown in as well. And we haven't actually talked about Chelsea's goalkeeping situation, but I mean, look, there's a massive contrast there. And if you have a personality, as we saw with Chelsea when they had Petr Cech or even Thibaut Courtois, somebody who stamps their authority on a team from the back, it just, I don't know, infects that enthusiasm, that belief into the back line. And Villa have got that, Chelsea don't.
Lest we forget, Simon, Chelsea put in one of their best, maybe even their best performance of the season last time they were at Villa Park. A bit different here, though, isn't it? Villa haven't had a midweek game. I know this is before the first leg of their Conference League semi against Olympiacos, but that's not till Thursday. So they're not going to be resting people here, are they? And you can't really make a case for them to start as anything other than overwhelming favourites to win the game.
That's right. I'm just bear with me a second.
Just bear with me, because the Green Waste Men are
here. Oh, yes! Look at him. He's running out onto the street. He's running out on the street in his pants going, oi, oi, you haven't been for the last 2 weeks.
I just like the fact he's wearing a Chelsea top whilst he's doing it as well.
And they've done it. No need for a passive-aggressive note. The Green Waste is being removed as we speak. It is upwards, onwards from here.
Everything feels better.
Oh, my resting heart rate is getting lower now.
What are we doing in their lives?
I can empathize so much with it. I've got a reputation around here as being the great recycler. I mean, it's just unbelievable. Oh, this is great.
Okay, so I vaguely remember the question. Yes, Aston Villa are favourites, but I remember Chelsea walking to Villa Park with everyone thinking this is a foregone conclusion. I was one of them, because don't forget, when Chelsea went to Villa Park, they had just been thrashed by Liverpool and Wolves in consecutive games. And the pressure was off. And you sort of almost feel like with this lot that is when they can perform, when no one expects anything of them. Although you could have argued that was the case on Tuesday night, and look what happened there. But they would have had a few days to recover mentally. I think physically, as I said at the top of the show, I just think that FA Cup semi-final defeat was a huge contributing factor with this squad. I'm not saying it's an excuse, but it didn't surprise me with this squad. How much can you get up for? And again, before I get pelters, I just wonder how much this group of players can get up for the possibility of qualifying for the Conference League. You should get up for Arsenal, obviously, but is that enough of a carrot to lift you from the gloom and despair? It should be. Look, don't get me wrong. I think it should. There's no excuse. But with this group of players, I'm just trying to make that argument. I think there's quite a few in there that would find it hard. But Villa, I think that little gap from Arsenal, I would hope to see that there'll be a bit more pride on show.
Well, let's be positive to finish. If Chelsea win, great, Chelsea win. If Chelsea lose, then Spurs lose too. So, you know, there is some crumb of comfort.
A win-win. Yeah. Or lose-lose, yeah.
We shall see. As I say, 8 o'clock Saturday for that. We'll review it in our Monday pod, which might be with you a little bit later than usual. That's enough misery. Let's talk about the women's team next.
Customers are rushing to your store. Do you have a point-of-sale system you can trust, or is it a real POS? You need Shopify for retail. Shopify POS is your command center for your retail store. From accepting payments to managing inventory, Shopify has everything you need to sell in person. With Shopify, you get a powerhouse selling partner that effortlessly unites your in-person and online sales into the one source of truth. Track every sale across your business in one place and know exactly what's in stock. Connect with customers in line and online. Shopify helps you drive store traffic with plug-and-play tools built for marketing campaigns from TikTok to Instagram and beyond. Get hardware that fits your business, take payments by smartphone, transform your tablet into a point-of-sale system, or use Shopify's POS Go mobile device for a battle-tested solution. Plus, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. Do retail right with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/theathletic, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/theathletic to take your retail business to the next level today. Shopify.com/theathletic.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Ah, the sweet sanctuary from the calamity that is Chelsea FCW. On Saturday, the women's team play under Emma Hayes at Stamford Bridge for the final time as they aim to reach the Champions League final at the expense of the mighty Barcelona. The Blues lead 1-0 from last weekend's first leg in Spain. Here's our friend Charlotte Harper pondering how Chelsea can make their first leg advantage count.
Beating Barcelona is a big psychological boost for Chelsea. I just think they have to take it back to the Bridge and not be overwhelmed by that pressure. It feels like because you're 1-0 ahead, you're in your home stadium, it feels like you should win the game and not to put that pressure on themselves. Emma Hayes has always said it's half time. There's still another 90 minutes plus to play. It'll be really interesting, their game plan. It's kind of like a game of chess. Do Barcelona move? If they do change, how do Chelsea react? Do you stick with the same game plan because it works so well? Really interesting, the preparation going into it. Chelsea played Aston Villa, which they like. They say they like it because the momentum, it feels good. They only had one day to prepare, really, so not overthinking. It's the flip this time. Chelsea have a week to focus solely on that game, whereas Barcelona have a game on Wednesday. I think that's actually good for Barcelona to get that kind of defeat out of their system and go again. I don't know how you get James a bit more involved at Stamford Bridge. I think she will be key, but every Chelsea player had at least a 7-plus performance. I don't think there was a real weak link in that Chelsea team. Buchanan, the handball, but defensively they were solid. Midfield, disciplined, you know, in attack, they took their chances. I don't know, can Emma Hayes pull off that tactical master plan again against Barcelona? So it's going to be a huge, huge ask.
And what about the Barcelona perspective? Laia Cervelo Herrero says they're going to be a different prospect.
Probably the best way to beat Barca is continue doing like the strategy that Emma Hayes did in the first leg and try to do it like efficiently like they did. But I can see Barca just playing so different than they did in the first leg. So I give them a chance, to be honest.
You think they'll play very differently, just faster and more like themselves?
Better, you know? Yeah, I think.
Full stop.
Yeah, because they continue doing what they normally do, but they were slower, they were more erratic, as we were mentioning before. So it's just trying to do it, but doing it good and be more focused. And I know that probably Graham Hansen will be so mad and she will want to play. And she is a player that you have to be afraid of. So I can see players just playing from anger, and I think that's what should worry Chelsea.
Charlotte and Laia joining Sophie Penny there on Full Time Europe, the Athletic's women's football podcast. The next episode will be recorded at Stamford Bridge on Saturday, so make sure you check that out when it drops into your podcast feed. We'll have Jesse with us on Monday to run through the game. Simon, after the first leg, you said that was arguably the greatest win of Emma Hayes' Chelsea career. How are you feeling ahead of this one? Because, you know, wounded animal and all that, the job is half done.
Oh, for sure. I mean, by no means was I suggesting that. Who knows, I might have to recycle that tweet on. no, this one. And then they win the Champions League. No, this one. But yeah, I mean, I don't think anyone at Chelsea will be thinking their place in the final is booked for sure. Barcelona are more than capable of coming to Chelsea and overturning this game. The beauty of it is Stamford Bridge is going to be packed. I'm really annoyed that the schedulers have clashed it essentially with the men's team. You know, I don't know if there's anything they could have done to avoid it. Probably not. Well,
don't play a Premier League game at 8 o'clock on a Saturday night. That would be my idea.
As Pep Guardiola, and I sat in on his press conference last Saturday, broadcasters don't care, you know. But I'm annoyed because I'd like to watch it, but I'm going to be commuting to Villa Park. But yeah, it's going to be really tough. But with the home crowd behind them, you know, let's hope they can get over the line. I think it would be a magnificent team. But to win in Spain, to beat Barcelona, who have been unbeaten at home for, what, 5 years, and also the record of goal scoring and keep a clean sheet, show that kind of resilience again, and they can get over the line. But it's going to be really, really tough still.
And we're dealing in ifs, buts and maybes, Dom, but there's the prospect here of an absolutely delicious final. So Lyon beat PSG 3-2 in the first leg of their semi. We are expecting, but it's not confirmed, for Sonia Bonpastel, their coach, to be Emma Hayes' replacement. So those two could be facing each other in the Champions League final before one replaces the other. I mean, get your Athletic long reads ready now, because the narrative is just too delicious to resist there.
Well, you've done my job for me there, Matt. Thank you very much. Yeah, it's funny, isn't it? Football has this tendency to throw things like this up. And it just shows the calibre of Bonpastel as well, that, you know, that she's taking this Lyon team, by the look of things, to the final after that first leg victory. So, of all the candidates out there, she's clearly the strongest, if not the strongest. And let's see how that story develops in the next few weeks. I just really hope that it's been a difficult few weeks, months for Emma Hayes in many ways. She's done so much for Chelsea and for women's football, I think, in this country, that it would be nice if she went out with the Champions League to celebrate, rather than us sort of having to sort of scrutinize what's, you know, some of the things that have happened over the last month or so. This would be a far more appropriate finale, let's say, ending to her time as an English club manager. So, yeah, fingers crossed. It was always the Holy Grail, wasn't it, for Chelsea and for her? So let's hope that she gets her chance to take on probably Lyon in the final, but big ask still on Saturday.
As we record, 33,500 tickets sold. If you are able geographically, financially to get there, please do, because you won't regret it. It's a family-friendly kickoff time of 5:30. And we're talking about an era for Chelsea women that will never be matched. Emma Hayes has won every trophy that the club has ever won. It's never going to get this good again, surely. So go down, pay her your respects if you can. Elsewhere in Chelsea news, the under-21s play their final game of the regular PL2 season on Friday night. They host Southampton. They're already assured of a place in the playoffs, but they could finish anywhere from sort of 4th to 10th position, so they don't yet know who they'll face. The regular season doesn't finish till Monday night, so we'll let you know on Thursday who they get in the playoffs. The under-18s have another chance to wrap up the PL South title when they host Leicester at Cobham on Saturday. They're 5 points ahead of second place West Ham with 4 games left. West Ham only have 3 to play, so a win for Chelsea and anything but for West Ham would see them crowned champions. Who's going to be champion of this week's quiz, though? We'll find that out next.
Let's go.
No, it's not. My head's not in it, so you're fine. Still thinking about the recycling.
By the way, and I almost interjected, but I've already thought of when Bonpastel, the club DJ has got to play Shaggy Bombastic, right? Because that is set up for the chant, isn't it?
So there are times when you just don't say the things that come into your head.
They call her Madame Bonpastel. Yeah.
It's set up, isn't it? Chelsea fans, there you go. There's a chant. Get working on it for next season. Thank you very much.
They'll end up not appointing it because of that.
Yeah, suddenly breaking news.
Chelsea withdraw from talks.
More like Sonia Bonpastel.
All right, we've taken a circuitous route to get to this week's quiz. The boys have done all they can to put it off, but it's going to happen. Dom, you're going to kick us off. Again, this is a Chelsea-Aston Villa quiz for about the 700th time this season, so hopefully there's not too many repeated questions. Dom, who scored Villa's goal in the 3-1 Chelsea FA Cup fourth round replay win at Villa Park in February?
One of the wingers. 50-50 in it, although I've now given side.
The other.
Diaby.
Correct. 1-0. Well done. Simon, whose most recent Chelsea appearance came in the first FA Cup fourth round game at Stamford Bridge between the teams this season?
Came in the last...
In the first, the 0-0 fourth round game at Stamford Bridge.
Crikey.
That's fourth round.
Yep.
Okay. Is it either someone that's got injured or was it a youth player? Suddenly I can't name anybody.
Nice. Literally can't think of anybody in the Chelsea squad.
Who played? Didier Drogba. crikey. My mind's gone blank. Not for the first time in my life. Hugo Chukwu.
It's not a bad guess, but it's not right, Dom.
Well, I'm guessing that the fourth round was quite towards the end of January. So, Broya?
Ando Broya is the correct answer.
Oh, well done.
It's 2-0. That is the Albanian who, at time of recording, has started zero games for Fulham. What a good move that's been for all parties. Dom, second question of regulation time for you, and it's looking less and less likely. We'll need the tiebreaker. What was the attendance when Chelsea lost at Villa Park on the final day of the 2020-21 season?
To the number.
How many could we get into grounds? Are we allowed to get into grounds then? What was it? Was it like 10%? I can't. 4,200?
Diamond, you can steal it.
It was close to 8,000.
Yeah, it was, but it wasn't 8,000. It was 10,000.
Were we allowed to get 10,000 into stadium? Was that the rule? Oh, no, it would have been a quarter.
It was the coldest final game of the season I've ever been to. I actually took a... Sorry, I do occasionally take the odd sad selfie, but on this one, I just had to record it because I was in full winter coat, scarf and hat. It was freezing. There you go.
Doesn't it feel like it's such a weird time now when you look back at it?
I had a tear in my eye that day hearing the Aston Villa fans sing because it had been that long. It was really oddly moving. That was also the game when the Chelsea coach wasn't moving for ages because the security staff wouldn't let them in, nor would they let me until the guy had finished his Raspberry Ripple ice cream. But that's the story for another podcast.
I remember you bitterly telling me about that.
Yeah.
On the day.
Didn't even offer me a lick. Where were we? We are on question two Simon. Simon, which defender signed for Chelsea from Aston Villa in 1987?
That's Dorigo, isn't it? Tony
it
Dorigo?
Is. Tony Dorigo. Well very done. Good. Very quick. Yeah. Dom, your final question. Lucy, can we get a score update, please?
Oh, at least I've got a consolation goal. More than Chelsea managed on Tuesday night, I feel, I'm showing some character.
I think, Dom, you might have had this question before, but I do think that it bears repeating. Please spell Chukwuemeka.
Oh, for God's sake.
Bear in mind, you're the editor, so this should be absolutely within your wheelhouse.
Chukwuemeka.
Very good indeed. Absolutely right to the letter. Would you have got that, Simon?
Yes.
All right, so that is 3-1 and an unassailable lead, but I'm going to ask you the final question anyway, Simon.
How do you spell Chelsea?
Who is the only Aston Villa player to score against Chelsea in the Carabao Cup this season? This is the only question that drew some praise from producer Lucy.
Hang on a minute. So Dom gets how do you spell a player's name?
A difficult one.
Yeah, but... The only Villa players, right, you got to think of this, one of the, your weird, you've got to think of people that scored against Chelsea. This is where my mind goes blank again.
Only Aston Villa player to score against Chelsea.
I'm trying to remember who they played.
But they haven't played in the Carabao Cup. No wonder your brow's so furrowed, Dom.
No. I'm thinking about loan players who have gone out to lower league clubs now.
Yeah, exactly. I'm trying to remember who they played in the blooming League Cup.
Take Dom's logic there, Simon, and flip it on its head. He's thinking about loan players who've gone out to a lower league club. Who's the only Aston Villa player to score against?
Oh, of course, you know the answer to this, Si. You of all people know the answer to this.
Oh, bloody hey, hell. Don't do that, because it just makes
no,
me...
Honestly,
you tweeted about this goal time and what it would do to this player.
You gave me so much grief for not letting you interview this player.
Oh,
he's got two
Michael
first names.
Walker's thank you.
Yeah, thank you. Can you also give me any more clues? Like, I interviewed his brother.
Yeah.
It's Morgan Rogers. Yeah, I never really got that without the without the clues.
Played for Middlesbrough.
Yeah. Yes. Really good question. If I
that is a great yourself. Question, which I wouldn't have got.
well done, Dom. You've won.
That was impressive.
I'm going to tell you the tiebreak because, Simon, you might be able to get this. How many times have Chelsea won at Villa Park in the Premier League?
Ooh. It's a lot, isn't it? They very rarely lose them. Sorry.
It's not. Yeah, it is. I would have guessed how many. So, 92, 93. Yeah, 30. I would guess something about maybe about 10, 11, about a third.
Done.
It's probably something daft like 18.
It's 13. That's pretty good.
Yeah, that's what I was about right, wasn't I? I said about a third.
Well, no, you were wrong, but you were close.
Yeah, but 10, 11. It's like, I was sort of thinking, and there'd be quite a few draws in there, wouldn't there? How many times have they lost? Have you got that?
Producer's pulling a face and now holding some fingers up.
Eight. Yeah. That's what I thought. It was a bit. That was my. Yeah.
That's
anyway.
What I thought after the answer is given. Enough said about that. Well, Simon will be at Villa Park. You can read his thoughts on the game at theathletic.com/ChelseaPod. That's the place to go to sign up if you aren't currently a subscriber. Dom, what else is there on or coming onto the site for people to enjoy?
Well, start of next week, probably Tuesday morning, we're hoping to have a sort of a rap piece on this sensational insight into the murky world or the world of football transfers and agents that has been provided by Saif Ruby's trial this week. I mean, quite remarkable things being said at Southwark Crown Court, including a very, very, very rare public appearance from Marina Granovskaya, who gave evidence on Tuesday. It should be Jacob Whitehead's going to wrap that up for us with a sort of look back at the week once we have a verdict on Monday, most likely. So that should be very, very interesting. For it's a lot of insight into Chelsea dealings.
Yeah, do go and check that out. There'll be loads of good content around the Champions League semi-final as well. If you'd like to follow us on Twitter, now known as X, that is at SO Cobham Pod. If you could be kind enough to leave us a 5-star review and some nice words on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your pods, that's the best way to help other Chelsea fans find the show. We'll be back with you on Monday. Have a great weekend. Bye for now.
The Athletic.